we got a chance to introduce Sefer Devarim last time by looking at the fact that we have a structure of Chamisha, Chumshei Torah. We talked about the fact that inherently, even in the way that we phrase it, Chamisha, Chumshei Torah, means that there are five fifths of Torah, and five is essential to Torah. So if five is essential to Torah, even more so, as we're about to enter into learning Sefer Devarim itself, with Sefer Devarim being the fifth book, that somehow Devarim has to be, it's one can sense it, but Devarim has to be that wrapping up Sefer. That if Chumash is inherently a system of five, and this is the fifth book, it has to reflect those themes of everything that we discussed that five is about. It has to bring them to the conclusion. This Sefer has to be the wrapping up, the culmination of everything that Chumash itself set out to accomplish. It has to link back into all of those themes of five that we discussed last time. And either this year or next year, we're going to link everything from that introduction back in. But for right now, recognizing that it's that fifth book and that we're now really entering into that book, that Sefer of Sefer Devarim, let's take a look at Sefer Devarim as a whole. What's unique about Sefer Devarim? Think about Sefer Devarim without even having looked through the text necessarily. Think about it for a minute. There are many aspects that are unique about it. What are a few of them that we can pick up on? A lot of repetition. Great. We have this sense that there's a lot of chazara going on in Sefer Devarim, and that's partially true. And we're going to talk about that a lot today. But there's a sense of chazara. Now, we often think that it's a book of repetition because of two reasons. One is there are at least three stories that are repeated. In Devarim, we get a repetition of Cheta Egel. In Ve'et Chanan, we get a repetition of Matan Torah. In Ekev, we get a repetition of Cheta Egel. But then we also sort of space out for the summer months, which again, we're also going to talk about why it is that we seem to not learn Sefer Devarim. And we forget that after that, there really isn't much repetition of any stories in Chumash. But there is definitely a Chazara element, and we're going to link right back into that today. Good. So there's Chazara, which we really don't see anywhere else in the Torah. What else do we have? Unique about Sefer Devarim. It's one long speech. Yeah. The whole structure, the whole style of Sefer Devarim is different than any Sefer in Chumash. All of the other ones are told in a more clear narrative style, almost like a third-person narrator, if you will. Whereas here in Sefer Devarim, it's this long drasha of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's Moshe speaking the entire time. There's the introductory psukim that emphasize it, right? Eile ha-divarim, these are the divarim, asher diber Moshe el kol Yisrael beve Arden, etc., etc. And then he starts talking, and for 90-95% of the whole Sefer, it's him giving over this speech. But this concept of Moshe Rabbeinu speaking it out, this concept of it being Devarim, this speech, is unique to all other Sfarim in Chumash. And in fact, almost all of the Mefarshim struggle with the fact, what is the nature of Sefer Devarim? If it's part of Chamisha Chumshei Torah, what defines Torah is that it's coming Mipi Hashem. Where is Sefer Devarim coming from? It seems to be Mipi Moshe. And there are many different answers to this. We're not going to get into that in these shirim. But again, all of them farshim deal with it, whether it's that Moshe Rabbeinu gave this long speech, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu went back and he wanted this speech to be part of Torah, so he reorganized it in the way that he wanted it, and so it was God putting these words together. Or whether, as the deeper farshim talk about, that the part of the body that Moshe is most associated with is the throat, and that God was literally speaking through the throat of Moshe Rabbeinu, but then bringing up many questions as to why does this Sefer specifically need to come out in that way? Does it need to be God not just speaking, but God speaking entirely through mankind? Dafka through Moshe Rabbeinu? I mean, the answers only raise questions, but it's part of the unique identity of the Sefer itself. In terms of where the Sefer takes place, what's the background, what's the context of Sefer Devarim? We're on the border of Eretz Yisrael. Eberle Yarden. Well, how long does this whole Sefer take place over? How long does Sefer take place for? A little over a month, not long at all. What were you going to say? From when? Why is it a little over a month? When does it start? Aleph Shvat, excellent. Right? That's what the Chumash, that's what it says in the opening Psukim. Ba'ashtei asar chodesh be'achad l'chodesh, pasukimo. It starts on the first day of the 11th month, which is the first day of Shvat. there are a lot of deep connections between Sefer Devarim and the month of Shvat, which is the month that we happen to be in right now. So we'll talk about some of that overlap. And Moshe Rabbeinu dies on Zion Adar, so it's around 37 days long. That's the whole book. It's a very short Sefer in terms of the span of time. And it's those last 37 days before we enter into Eretz Yisrael. So the whole book is taking place, Me'ever LaYarden. It's taking place physically. We never move in this Sefer. We're standing there on the border of Eretz Yisrael waiting to get in. If this whole Sefer is being given on the border of Eretz Yisrael, what is that implying to us about what one of the goals of the Sefer is going to be? To get into Eretz Yisrael, right? Meaning we spent all of Chumash, certainly from the beginning of Sefer Shmot, but all of the whole journey of Jewish history, from the beginning of Adam Rishon, but certainly from the beginning of Shmot, the whole journey was to get to Eretz Yisrael. I don't even mean that in necessarily a quote-unquote Zionistic sense, meaning that's literally, that's the narrative of Chumash, is the journey to Eretz Yisrael. It's inescapable. It's the journey to Eretz Yisrael. So we spend from the beginning of Shmot all the way to now getting to the border of Israel, and we land there at the end of the Sefer Midbar. And this whole book takes place right there, by our vote, Moav, al Yarden Yerecho. We never move. And the implication is, clearly, that this is what we're going to need to know in order to enter into Eretz Yisrael. So what's unique about the content of Sefer Devarim? That somehow inherently it embodies that which we need to know to enter into Eretz Yisrael? And why is it that we're getting this information right now? Meaning what's new, what's being presented here in a way that's giving us what we need to know in order to enter into Eretz Yisrael, because that was what I was looking for. And why is it that this information is what's going to wrap up the Chumash, that's going to wrap up Chamisha Chumshei Torah? If it's during the last 37 days, the Me'ever LaYarden, what else does that mean about when this is taking place? Thinking more locally. It's the last 37 days of what? Also true, yes. I'm not even put that up. Meaning, in the same way, let's put it this way, because this is an important theme, but it's one that we'll kind of implicitly come back to again and again. If this, what we're learning is called Torat Moshe, then the two are intrinsically linked. And so when Torah ends, Moshe dies. And when Moshe dies, Torah ends. That's why the two have to come together. The end of Moshe's life and the end of Torah are one and the same. It's Torat Moshe. So yes, the end of Moshe's life, 100%. And we'll be talking about Moshe obviously throughout and certainly towards the end. But what else? It's the last 37 days of what? Especially when we hear in Midrashah last semester. Yeah, our journey in the Midbar. We've been traveling and traveling and traveling and traveling and desperately trying to get to Eretz Yisrael. We finally come to the end of the 40 years. So when thinking about Devarim, what is the nature of the Chazara aspect of Devarim? Why is it all coming through the speech of Moshe Rabbeinu? What is Dibor? Why is it that we need to hear it now at the end of our journey of the 40 years? This is specifically we need to talk at the end of the 40 years, and in what way to delve into the fact that it's not just the end of the 40 years, but it's also while we're standing on the border of Eretz Yisrael, and it's the last lessons that we receive as we're about to enter into Eretz Yisrael. That sets the stage. Let's jump into some of the content. Whenever we want to understand the essence of something, usually, especially in these shirim, one of the first things that we do is to go to the name. So let's not go for the obvious name of this Sefer. Is anybody aware of the way that Chazal refer to this Sefer, Sefer Devarim? Consistently. The Mishneh Torah. Sefer Devarim is called Mishneh Torah. So, let's take a look at its name. If a name indicates an essence and it's called the Mishneh Torah, what is Mishneh? To really understand what Mishneh is about, let's take a look at the root and what other words are associated, share the same root as the word Mishneh. Good. We have Shani, which means the second.
What else do we have?
Shana, a year. Excellent. Shane, a tooth. What else? Assumably, yes, I have to think about that one. Okay. Good, Shinoi. Which means a change. We're going to put that one separate because we're going to come back to that one. And what part of Torah? Say that? Mishnayot.
Right, Mishnah.
So if all of these words share the same roots, we have to understand what's the connection between these things. What's the connection between the second, a year, teeth, and Mishnayot? All of these have to do with going over something again, with review, with that chazara element that we said we'd immediately jump to as part of the essence of the Sefer. Right? When I go through something once, so Sheni, I go through it again. It's a second time. I'm going over the thing a second time. Shana is the repetitive cycle of the year. What's the non-repetitive cycle of the year? It's very timely. We just read about it. Last week's Parsha. The Chodashim. Chodesh is Milashon. Chidush, Chadash. That's the new aspect. The waxing and waning of the moon is that constant newness, the newness within the cycle of the year. But the repetitive, consistent cycle of the year, that's the Shana. Mishnayot, the way that one learns Mishnayot, and you go to certain schools today, I would assume even in Chutz La'aretz, the one that always jumps to mind is like Zilberman's in the Old City. Like they literally sit there and repeat again and again and again, scheme in the Mishnayot. That they just keep repeating and repeating and repeating the Mishnayot. But Mishnayot, the way that one learns Mishnayot, they're meant to say them with a nigun and keep repeating them and repeating them until they commit them to memory. But Mishnayot are the repetitive aspect of Torah in that way. Shinaim. We'll talk about this more in a second. But that's when we take food and we take a bite out of a piece of food, it's the teeth that are constantly chewing that same food again and again and again and again. It's that repetitive aspect that unites all of these words, that unites this concept. It's intuitive to us, but science has proven recently, meaning in the last 50 to 100 years, that when somebody reviews something again and again and again, that's how one of the primary ways to move things from working memory, from short-term memory, into long-term memory. It's a way to concretize the memory of something, to make it stronger for ourselves. We're coming to the end of Torah. We're coming to the conclusion of Torah. And now is the time that we need to concretize. We need to bring it home. We need to move the Torah from our short-term memory and commit it to our long-term memory so we can take it with us as we go forward. It's the part of Torah that we have to take forward with us. And so we come to the Mishnah Torah, the stage of the Torah where we're bringing everything together, solidifying it, because we're going to have to carry it with us. Where are we going to carry it with us into? Into Eretz Yisrael, as we're standing on the border. Now that's on the simplest level. That's not good enough for it to be the name of the Sefer. And that's not good enough to have a Sefer called the Mishnah Torah. There's another layer to what Chazara accomplishes. On the one hand, and it's significant in and of itself, that it moves things into long-term memory, that it solidifies things in memory. But beyond that, you know, you read in an intricate, well-written book, or in a previous lifetime, of course nobody's, in a previous lifetime, you watch an amazing, complicated movie, right? A good movie. The example that I used to give when I used to first start teaching Sefer Devarim, like a few years ago, that everybody used to relate to was The Matrix, but nobody probably has ever seen The Matrix anymore, right? No, we're done, we're out, Matrix is over. I think when we gave it on the interview shop, people said Inception was an example of that movie, although it's much less good than The Matrix. When you read a book like that, or you see a movie like that the first time, the whole time you're watching it the first time, you're getting down the basics of the plot. You don't know where it's going. You're trying to hold all of those different elements and understand where is the author, where is the director, where is the writer, where is it all going? And how is it tying up at the end? the whole kind of story of The Matrix is that in the whole first half an hour, 40 minutes, you don't know what's happening. And you can understand the movie without that. And that's part of the excitement of watching it the first time. But when you watch it the second time, when you go back to a movie or a book like that the second time, it's an entirely different experience. Because now I know where it's going. I know the big reveals. I know the biggest plot points. And now I can start picking up on the subtleties of what was woven into the script. The subtleties of what was woven into the narrative. And my experience going over something at separate time is so much richer than the first time. I see everything in a whole new light with a whole new perspective that I gain over time. That's a very different understanding of why there would be an importance in Chazara and in review. Is that it's bringing out new depths. It's bringing new things forth. And that's true of everything here. And that's why, I suspect, Rebbe didn't say it per se, but I think it has to be why this word shinoi, which is the odd one out, is also linked to the same root. Because inherently, when you go over something again, it's not just to see it a second time. There is a shinoi. There is a change that takes place. When you go over something again with a critical eye, when you go over something as rich and as deep as the Divrei Torah that we're talking about, for the second time, the third time, the fourth time, you see new depths. That's why, yes, one is supposed to go over and say Mishnayot again and again and again to commit them to memory, but the idea is when you read a Mishnah, Mishnah is totally terse. It's a few words that hold within it the depths of Torah Sheba Al Peh, and it was written that way intentionally. And that's why then when we finally had to sit down and write the Gemara goes on for pages on every Mishnah. Because the depths of the universe are inside such a few little words. And every time you look it over again and again and again, you see new depths that are brought out of those words. The cycle of the year, we're meant to go through that yearly cycle again and again, and it is repetitive. But we're meant to, as we talked about in our Shmot Shirim, for those who are all the way back in our Shmot Shirim, I think there are a few of you here. Yeah, there are a few of you here. Right? We talked about Achodesh Elachem, we talked about Dafka last week's parsha, we talked about that shir. That yes, it's the repetitive cycle of the year, but we're supposed to merge the lunar and solar cycle, that every time we go through the cycle of the solar year, there's chidush within it. That when I come to Purim this year, if I'm not, I shouldn't be experiencing the same Purim this year that I experienced last year, because if I did internally, I haven't grown at all. And so while this year cycles around and around and it's the same, my experiences should be different, because as I'm coming to Purim again a year later, with all the Torah that I've learned and the experiences that I've had, my experience of Purim should be inherently different. That's the Shana. Sheni, again, a second time, things are new, they're different. Shein, Shinayim. So it's the hardest one to relate to, because we have such a distorted relationship with food, Bizman Hazeh. But that a person, when they take a bite out of a piece of food, every single time a person chews a piece of food, they're drawing out more of the nutrients and more of the energy and more of the life force that's inside of that food. We're meant to, we're supposed to, we tend to wolf down our food. The fact that we're comparing ourselves to an animal like a wolf tells you that's probably bad. We're meant to take a bite of food and slowly chew it and chew it and chew it until we've drawn everything that a Kadosh Baruch Hu put in there out of it, and then bring that into ourselves. Because new things come out every time we go over something. So what the Mishneh Torah is setting out to do is to both go over these critical elements of Torah, which might not just be the stories, by the way, but to go over these quote-unquote critical elements of Torah, which we'll have to see what they are when we go into the text, and to review them, to commit them to memory, but not just to commit them to memory, not just to bring them with us to Eretz Yisrael, but to bring out whole new depths that we never knew were there. So some of the Mefarshim explained very beautifully at the beginning of the Parsha, after the whole few pasuk introduction, if you take a look inside, I believe it's pasuk hey. It says, "Ho'il Moshe be'er et ha-Torah hazot le'mor," which literally means, it's literally translated as, Moshe began to explain the Torah, saying. It's in your Chumashim, it says, "Ho'il Moshe be'er et ha-Torah hazot le'mor." Moshe began to explain the Torah. But what word does this mean that we used to say explain? What is a be'er? It's a well. By explaining it, by going over it again, by being the Mishneh Torah, what is he doing? He's going deep into the wellsprings of Torah and drawing forth new waters. New waters of Torah, new life within Torah, new perspectives in Torah that we didn't see before. Normally, I wouldn't go into this as in depth, but because we're literally sitting in Shvat, Kadosh Baruch Hu is mesader things in such a way that we're learning Devarim in Shvat. Could you ignore the fact that it starts in Shvat? That what is Shvat all about? Shvat is all about drawing forth that water of Torah, drawing forth that potential. It's the time, this is the time in the year that we're celebrating Tu B'Shvat, is because it's the time in the year, based on a lot of Gemaras and a lot of Rashi's and Masechet Tanit, without going through all of it now, where the trees have finished drawing in all of the waters of the rainy season, and now it's transforming that water into sap to produce new fruits. That's what Shvat is. Shvat is the harnessing and bringing all of that potential in and transforming it into something new, seeing it in a different way, producing sweet fruits. Moshe Rabbeinu is producing the sweet fruits of Torah by drawing in Mayim Ela Torah, by drawing in that water of Torah and producing something new. According to deeper sources in Chazal, the sign, the astrological sign for the month of Shvat is a dli. What's a dli? It's a bucket used to go down and draw out from the well. There are more things to discuss, but if you start looking into what Shvat is really about and what Tu B'Shvat is about and what the month in itself, its essence is, all the Sfarim link it to this because this is one Moshe Rabbeinu gives over the bulk of Sefer Devarim. But this idea of really bringing forth new fruit, seeing things in a new way, taking everything, all of that potential and actualizing it, going over things a second time to bring things forth, that's all of what Sefer Devarim is about. Tov. So let's take all of this as truth so far, that we're reading the Mishneh Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu is saying we need to go over the Torah, we need to bring new things forth, we need to see the Torah in a whole new way. There's a simple question to ask on that. How many days did it take for Moshe Rabbeinu to give over this Torah, this Sefer? Is it around 37? How many years did he have available to him to give over this Sefer? 40 years! 40 years! Moshe Rabbeinu was holding on to all of this beautiful, amazing, important Torah. Torah that Bnei Yisrael absolutely, 100%, unquestionably needed to know in order to get into Eretz Yisrael. Needed to know in order to become the Jewish people. Needed to know in order to conclude the Torah. He was holding on to this. And I got to tell you, as a rabbi, if you have something really, really long to tell someone, a really long drasha to give over, the worst move possible is to give a longer drasha. Never works. Why not spread it out? Say, listen, once a month, on the first of the month, come hear new amazing Torahs. Once a year. 37 days. You could have done one day a year. Why is he waiting now? Why is he waiting 40 years later to give everything over and crunch it into the last 37 days of his life? The last 37 days of Torah. So Moshe himself explains that. He gives us the answer to that question. If you flip forward in your Chumashim to the end of Sefer Devarim, towards the end of Sefer Devarim, in Perek Chavtet, Pasuk Dalet, the end of Parshat Ki Tavo, really when we start transitioning into the really wrapping up stages of Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu says, Perek Chavtet Pasuk Gimel, Ki Pasuk for Sefer Devarim, V'lo Natan Hashem Lachem, God did not give you, Lev Lada'at, a heart to understand, to know, the einayim lirot, eyes to see, the oznayim lishmo, and ears to hear ad hayom hazeh. Moshe Rabbeinu defines for them that they were not able to take in the Torah until now. They needed to wait until the end of the 40 years. Because this number 40 is a critical number in Torah. Let's do something similar to what we did with Mishneh. Now let's put up on the board all things that relate to the number 40. Understand why it is. Why is it they had to wait 40 years? What happened at 40? What's significant about the number 40 that now they're ready to hear all of these new things that Moshe Rabbeinu is going to bring out of the Torah? Excellent. Good. Mabul. 40 days and 40 nights. The flood. Keep going. Come on. There are some really obvious and then some not obvious ones. Let's go with the obvious ones first. 40 days in the desert. Good. That was as on those as you can. Good. In the Midbar. Matan Torah. Moshe's up there for 40 days and 40 nights. We're in the desert for 40 years. More. No more historical ones. Now more conceptual, ones. Yes, we could probably link that back in. We're not going to hone in on that one, but for sure we could. Good. Chazal tell us that it takes 40 years until a person can be omeid al divrei rabo. It takes 40 years till a person can really internalize the messages of their Rebbe. There's an understanding out there that one is probably not supposed to enter into the depths of Kabbalah until 40 years old. I'm using probably inadequate English terminology here, but work with me. It takes 40 days for an embryo to be considered a viable fetus halachically. There's a 40-day period there.
I don't know what to call it.
Okay. And this is one of my favorite ones, which that would probably be also. I haven't thought about it yet. But I happened to catch one. I already pointed out this one, which is that in a mikveh, there's 40 se'ah. Se'ah is a liquid measurement. It takes 40 se'ah to have a kosher mikveh. Now, this list is even harder than that last list. What do these things have to do with each other? The Mubble, Matan Torah, the Midbar, Omer al Divrei Rabo, understanding Kabbalah, an embryo to a fetus, a mikveh. I think when we gave it over in the winter Midrashah, somebody also pointed out that there is also 40 days between Tisha B'Av and Rosh Hashanah. Does that make sense? Is that right? Does that sound right? It doesn't sound right. No, Rosh Chodesh Elul and Yom Kippur. But there's 40 days there, and that is significant. Let's start and talk about that. And they actually link it to the maturation of an embryo to a fetus, actually. Very beautiful Torahs on that. What do these things have to do with each other? What 40 is about is that 40 is the number that embodies the concept of change and maturation. Of things maturing, of things moving on to the next level, moving on to the next stage, growing past its previous stage. When we're at the Mabul, now we're really reaching back. Only Eliora is going to remember this from when we learned Sefer Bereishit together, right? From the Mabul, that took the world from its Ni'urim stage, from its adolescent stage into its adult stage. Remember that discussion, right? All the way back in Parsha Noach. We're really like now bringing two ends of Torah together, right? That what happened at the Mabul was is that we were in this adolescent stage of reality, and they're looking to prove this and to bring this up. And the Mabul wipes out the world and resets the world in a place where it's now more mature and able to fight against certain layers of Tumah that it was not able to fight against before. 40 days and 40 nights of the Mabul. The Midbar, it takes us 40 years to mature in the Midbar, which is exactly what we're going to come back to. Matan Torah, for the world to move from a pre-Torah reality into a post-Torah reality. A reality entirely lacking Torah to a reality with Torah inside of it takes a 40-day, 40-night process. It takes 40 years till a person can mature to a place where they really understand what it is the Rebbe was talking about. I'm not 40 yet, and I certainly haven't been learning from my Rebbe for 40 years. But every year when I go over and I listen to the Shiurim of Rebbe again and again, I realize how much I missed. No matter how many times I listen to it, no matter how many times I think about it, I come to a concept again, and I realize how little I understood. When I think about conversations that I had with Rebbe when I was in Shana Aleph and Shana Bet, even just simple conversations that I had with Rebbe 10 years later, and I remember them and I realize how little I understood, and I still got 30 more years to go. takes 40 years. Same thing Kabbalah, when one wants to enter into the depths of what Torah has, the deepest secrets of Torah. One needs to be in a place where they're mature enough to really understand what those secrets mean. Transition and maturation of life from a pre-stage of life to an embryo to viable life of a fetus. And on the level of a mikveh, that when a person goes into a mikveh, they go in tameh and they come out tahor. It's a total train. It's a total change. The way that some of the Svarim talk about it is that you're literally reborn anew as a new person. That the waters of the mikveh are actually like the same waters that were on the beginning of the first day of Bereshit. Bereshit bara Elokim et hashamayim ve'et ha'aretz va'aretz hayta tohu va'vohu v'choshech al pnei tohom v'ruach Elokim mirachefet al pnei hamayim. That primordial waters that we're going back to in the mikveh, that we go back to before our creation state, and we're now coming back as a new being. It's not even maturing, we're totally born anew in that way. Some of the Rishonim point out that the moment of purity that actually happens in the mikveh is not when one dunks in the mikveh. That the moment of purity in the mikveh is when one emerges. Because it's new life that's you're coming out tahor, you're coming out new. That just like a baby is born, the moment that they come out is when they're born. That when one, only when one emerges from the mikveh, that's the moment of purity. Because they're being born. They're coming out totally new. That's what 40 is about. It took B'nai Yisrael 40 years. They were not ready to hear it until now. They couldn't hear what Moshe Rabbeinu had to tell them. They were still maturing. The generation that left Mitzrayim, and we talked about this extensively last year when we learned Sefer Midbar. The generation that left Mitzrayim was supposed to be, it was supposed to be one fluid movement. Remember we talked about this? One fluid movement right out of Eretz Mitzrayim to Matan Torah and then landing in Eretz Yisrael. It wasn't even supposed to take so long. A few months. We wanted to wait until the Mishkan was built, fine, so then wait a year and then a few months, but the whole journey itself was very short. It was supposed to be one fluid movement. And we ruined everything. Through many sins in the desert, and the final one that really ruined it for us and broke history, we talked about last semester, was Chet HaMeraglim. We're going to come back to that either next year or this year after, because we're going to re-examine Chet HaMeraglim when it comes up again in Parshat Devarim. But that breaks history. And suddenly now we have two generations. We have Dor Yotzei Mitzrayim, the generation that left Egypt, and that generation is one stage. That generation is not mature in a way that they can enter into Eretz Yisrael. And they need to slowly but surely be wiped out, and a new generation emerges over 40 years and produces a new reality of Dor Ba'ei Ha'aretz, the generation that can successfully enter into the land of Israel. It takes 40 years for us to get to this place. And now we're finally here. We've matured to a place after 40 years where we're finally ready to hear everything that Moshe has to tell us. Moshe's re-examining of the Torah, his chazara of the Torah, the new waters of Torah that he's going to bring forth for us to drink in, to take in, to see things in a new way. Torah's that a review of Torah and a new perspective on Torah. That we require in order to get into Eretz Yisrael. Without this new perspective of Torah, we can't enter the land. That's what Sefer Devarim is. We're only missing one piece of the puzzle, which is the content. Right, thank you, Eliora. It's like a big grand speech. What's the content? What is it that Moshe Rabbeinu needed to teach us? So, going back to our narrative structure in movies and books, so this is called a cliffhanger, if you've ever met one before. So we're going to end on a cliffhanger, okay? We don't have any more time. And so what we're going to do next time is pick up exactly where we left off. And what we need to do is define what is this content? What is the nature of this content? This new content that we can only hear now that is Sefer Devarim. And what is it likely going to be linked to? What did we also leave out? Louder. Come on, you're the longest. Good, you can own it. The glaring hole in what we discussed today is that we didn't actually talk about the formal name of the Sefer, which is Sefer Devarim. What is Devarim? What is Dibor all about? And how does that define for us the essence of the content of this entire Sefer? Which B'nai Yisrael need to be learning right now on the board of Eretz Yisrael in order to take into Eretz Yisrael, in order to inherit Eretz Yisrael, in order to bring Torah to its close. So we'll examine the name Devarim, the essence of Dibor, and everything we need to know in order to enter Eretz Yisrael, and as we'll talk about, to enter into Olam Haba itself, we'll talk about Bezrat Hashem on Wednesday.